What's up, everybody? This is Healing Intentions, and I'm your host, Dr. Adrian Mimetti. This podcast is about natural health and wellness, mental health, cannabis, psychedelics, philosophy, and spirituality. Today, my guest is Dorothy Andreas. At the age of 19, Dorothy Andreas sold her car, left college, and bought a business. Over the next four decades, she started and scaled nine companies, winning over 80 awards for business ethics, business growth, and entrepreneurial excellence. While building her companies and raising two young sons, mostly as a single mother, she also served in leadership capacity on several boards of governance. Dorothy has raised millions of dollars for the charities she is passionate about. Today, Dorothy is an international best-selling author, keynote speaker, business and mindset growth coach, and a lifelong learner. She is a wife and a proud mother. You can learn more about her at streamlinesuccess.com, thetimeclass.com, or read her books, Streamline Success, Eliminate Chaos, and Conflict Revelation, both available on Amazon. Let's get started. All right. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Healing Intentions. This is your host, Dr. Adrian Mimetti. And today I have a really special guest, Dorothy Andreas. Welcome, Dorothy.
Thank you, Dr. Adrian. It's so wonderful to be here with you. Thank you. I'm honored and pleased.
Of course. Yeah, I had to have you on the show. We met through the MITT seminars that we both were, a part of and took part in last year. And I really enjoyed being in that with you, and I learned a lot from you, and really got inspired by you and, you know, all of that you've done and gone through in your life. So really wanted to kind of share that gift with all of my listeners. So really honored and happy that you're on the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
So why don't we just kind of start with a little background of yourself? You know, what's your story? How did you get into all of this that you're into right now?
Yeah, I started in the beauty industry. I went to a vo-tech school, so like half a day high school, half a day vo-tech school for cosmetology. Started competing in styling competitions and was really focused and dedicated, and won some really, you know, cool awards while I was in beauty school, and got a scholarship, went on, got my teaching license. And after high school, I was putting myself through college, like literally working three jobs to put myself through the local community college. You know, no family support, no emotional support, no financial support. And, I just wanted I wanted more for my life than what I had experienced growing up. So working hard, and this hair salon came up for sale in my neighborhood, and I was 19 years old, like didn't even know what I didn't know. And I went to meet with the woman, like made this appointment, didn't tell anybody I was doing this. I signed a sales agreement with her. Oh. And I don't know what she was thinking either. But anyhow, I went home that day, and I called my parents into the living room, and I said, you know, Dad, I need your help. I had a car, like I'd always worked. So I had a car, and I said, I need you to help me sell my car, like right away this week. I need the money from it. I just bought Her Majesty Hair Salon, and oh my God, it had like red velvet wallpaper. Wow. It was crazy. This was in 1980. And I said, I bought this hair salon, and I have to pay her in 7 days. And my father looked back, and I thought, like, maybe for the first time in his life, he'd be proud of me. But no, he didn't. He stepped back. He looked at me, and he said, well, you're not smart enough to run a business, and I don't want to be any part of watching you fail. Mm. And in that moment, I made a decision, like, F you, you know? Yeah. And I just thought, I will do whatever it takes to prove him wrong. And I sacrificed many decades of my life in the pursuit of proving him wrong rather than making myself happy. Mm. So, you know, I mean, I think so many of us do that. You know, it was we want to prove that we're right rather than really experience what true happiness is. And I think that comes from the underlying fear. You know, for the next many years, anytime anything would go wrong in my business, like I didn't know how to run a business. I didn't even know how to run a cash register or I didn't know how to do any of it. You know, mm-hmm. I had to like figure it out. Adrian, every single time that even the smallest thing would go wrong, instantly, my default thought was, my dad was right. I really have no clue what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And then I would put this act on like, well, but I'm going to pretend like I do. And I mean, that's so, you know, it takes so much energy to do that. And, you know, so I didn't know how to grow the business, the asset that I had. So, you know, 6 weeks later, I made enough money in the business to go buy a new car and I moved into an apartment and, you know, that was that. But the only asset I had were the clients that were sitting in my chair. So every 30 minutes, so I took care of 17 clients a day and I had an assistant and, you know, to learn how to run the business, I would ask my clients, you know, hey, do you know anything about how to do inventory? And then one of my clients was a bookkeeper and we bartered services. I would go to her house on Tuesday nights and she'd smoke Territon cigarettes and drink black iced tea. And in exchange, you know, she'd teach me how to do bookkeeping on a dome weekly record keeping book. And we didn't have the internet then. Right. And on a Friday morning, I would fix her hair. And, you know, so that was how I grew. A couple years into it, there was a fire in my building. And I lost everything I had, everything. A good friend of mine, I went all through grade school and high school with her, lived in an apartment, and the fire department called my house. And as I was driving up to the scene, I saw them carrying her out in a body bag. Wow. And it was devastating. And like, you know, you feel this like range of emotions. And I just thought like, oh my gosh, she lost her life before she ever got the opportunity to live it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make the meaning of my life more important. Wow. And, you know, so I just figured it out. I learned about being underinsured at that point. And so now I can teach young entrepreneurs about the importance of insurance and many other systems in business growth. But, you know, so over the years, I'd expand, I'd open a new location. I would sell the other location. I just kept growing, got married, had my first child. When my first child was born, I felt like for the first time in my life, there was a meaning for my purpose on this earth. And I needed to get way more serious about everything that I was doing. And, you know, still making gross mistakes as a human being, like looking for love in all the wrong places, looking just, you know, with the intention of looking for love. And I think so many of us do that, Adrian. You know, we get a pat on the back from somebody and it's the first time that we've been really acknowledged in such a nice, kind way. And we're so needing of it that we miss the shadow that's hanging around in the scenario. So, you know, in terms of pivotal growth, when I was 27, I got involved with Landmark Education, used to be EST. Mm-hmm. Phenomenal training, really pivotal into life growth. And I know a lot of people have done it and don't like it. I took it at face value and really saw it was an opportunity to step outside of myself and look at my whole entire life objectively and start to live more in the experience than in the theory or beliefs that I had been living by that weren't serving me so well to that point. So that was exciting. In 1986, I decided I'd been reading about, you know, what was going on in Europe with the beauty industry, and day spas hadn't really hit America yet. So in 1986, I opened a day spa in a really up and coming trendy area. And for the first 6 months, people would come in to the business that was in a business district. People would come in the door and say, "What's a day spa?" I kid you not, people didn't even know what the word spa was in 1986. Wow. Unless they traveled, you know, unless they traveled. They didn't know. You know, spa comes from Europe. So that was interesting. Immediately, I was out of space. I expanded. I kept growing. And then in 1995, I was very involved with professional organizations, had a second child by that time, was elected as the first female and youngest person ever to preside over an international organization in the beauty industry. And I got to start to travel internationally, speak on different stages with translators. And that was really very cool. And that really, you know, I know you had a question about how I got to the speaking part of my journey. And it really began then that I really saw my words impacted an audience, because I would just speak about the reality, the truth, the truth that all of us go through that most people don't talk about from a stage.
Right.
You know,
that's powerful. Wow. Yeah. Fun fact. I don't know. I learned this through a documentary about the history of medicine. He talks about spa, and that what that comes from is Latin sanitas per aquam, which means healing through water.
Yes, I love that. Well, you'll be interested to know that the very first barbers were medical doctors.
Yep.
If you wanted your haircut, you had to be a medical doctor to be able to provide a haircut. And it was only when ether was invented that cosmetology and medicine got separated.
Interesting. I didn't know about that fact. That's why the red and white around the barber was signifying with blood, right? Because they would do the surgeries and stuff in there. Interesting. Very interesting. Yeah. So
very interesting. Yeah.
So the med spa kind of, you know, women's spa business, how did that, obviously it started in 86 and you were a pioneer in that here in the US. So then obviously it worked out well for you long term.
It worked out really very well. I had a building with two levels and a lot of employees, but we really were struggling to keep up with the demand. So as I was elected into this organization, it's really interesting how, you know, things are like up and down. You know, they're never just good. It's
right.
If it wasn't for the down times, we wouldn't appreciate the good times. And I think if we didn't have the down times, we wouldn't be able to be kept humble.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had one of those moments, my first official duty as the international president. And I grew up in Pittsburgh. So, you know, I'm from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I'm not from New York. I'm not from LA, Chicago. I worked hard in the organization and I produced results and I would always ask questions and provide answers. And so when it came time for the international election, I was really surprised that I got the votes. And my first official duty was going to New York. I was meeting with a group of 20 delegates from Japan to prepare for an international show that would be held. This was in November, that would be held the following spring. Unbeknownst to me, while I was in New York, there was a bad storm and my house caught on fire and we lost everything. Now, I don't know any of this is happening. You know, wow. So we lose everything we have. The house, we had to move out of the house. We lost all of our possessions. I mean, the house was renovated and we were able to move back in a year later, but except for the clothes on our backs. So at that point, I had a son who was in third grade. My little son, my younger son, Joe, was in third grade. Julian was in kindergarten. And my marriage was a little bit rocky at that point. And my mom was staying at my house while I traveled. And so we were grossly misplaced. I mean, my friends were bringing clothing for my children. We had to get into, you know, we stayed in hotels. Mm. And then we got temporary housing and rental furniture. And I mean, it was just really the most stressful thing. All of this happens like in a couple of days. And that same week, I find out that the person I've entrusted to run my business while I go do this year of service is really mismanaging the money.
Mm.
Happens in the same week. Wow. I lose all my clothes. I lose my possessions. My children are whacked out of their minds. And I have to speak on a stage in 4 days and I've got like nothing. Like the overnight bag I had in New York with me, my toothbrush, like not even a spare pair of underwear. So, you know, I had to go shopping. And so I get this phone call and, from the, East Coast director of the organization. And he said, understand that you've just had major crisis in your personal life and your business. We're prepared that we're going to move the vice chair, Joseph Cutrofello, into the presidency for the remainder of your term, but we wanted to discuss this with you. And Adrian, in that moment, I thought, you know what? I'm the first woman to hold this position for the rest of history. It will be. She couldn't handle the stress.
Mm.
So as the words are coming out of my mouth, I'm like, I don't know how I'm saying, absolutely not. I can handle this. And in fact, my plan is to grow the organization by 30%, you know, to grow the chapters, to reach more continents. And I'm saying this sitting on a rental chair with borrowed clothing, you know, I mean, it was so crazy. But what happened, and this was really how I got to where I am right now today. So I know there's a lot of detail here, but for anybody who's listening, I think it's important to understand that like shitty things happen.
Mm-hmm.
And we get to make a choice in that moment about who we are and what's going to define us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's going to define us? And in making those choices that lead towards the most uncomfortable places we've ever been, and that's where the tremendous growth as a human comes from.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, it would have been easy and comfortable to say, sure, hand it off to a guy, you know? And I mean, and I've never felt, you know, people always would say to me, how did you manage the glass ceiling? I'd be like, what glass ceiling? That's mm-hmm. just a story. You know, mm-hmm. I don't view myself at any disadvantage at all because I'm a female. That's just history.
Right.
That's not the truth. That's the story some people believe. That's not the story I choose to believe.
I love it.
So, yeah. So, you know, weeks are going on. I'm literally working 19 hours a day. And sleeping 5 hours a night.
Wow.
And not sleeping well. You know, I have heart palpitations. I end up in the emergency room. Still does not slow me down. And it was not until one day, Julian, my little boy, who was 4 at the time, climbed up on my lap and he put his little precious hands on my face and he said, Mommy, you're just not fun anymore.
Mm.
And it broke my heart. And, you know, again, defining moment. I thought, okay, my marriage is probably not going to last. My business stuff, I'll figure out. This term as president, it's putting me on the map internationally in the beauty industry. And it's temporary. I've got to deconstruct and reconstruct every single thing in my life. So I started looking at what's life balance. Mm-hmm. And so for entrepreneurs, it's really hard. You know, employees have 104 days off a year because they don't work on weekends for the most part. 104 days off before they get vacation time or sick leave or holidays. Entrepreneurs mostly never take a day off where we're not thinking or working. So I started really looking at how out of whack the sense of life balance was. So I came up with what components make up life balance. And here were the 5 components. And this was 1995. I still teach on this concept today. Awesome. So we start with physical, right? Because if physically we're not good, you know, our physical body, we're not good for anybody.
Yep.
Doesn't matter what kind of a business we have, we can't enjoy it. And mm-hmm. our physical space, really getting super organized about my physical space. I might've been living with rental furniture and dishes and pots and pans, but there was no reason that it didn't need to be organized, alphabetized and color coded. So, I mean, like, literally the afternoon that my son said this to me, I started cleaning my physical space.
Mm.
But really intentional about my health. So physical's first, relationships are second, mm-hmm. right? Because what causes stress? What causes joy? How do we live? We're in relationship with ourselves first,
right?
And relationships with others. And I started really thinking, whatever relationship I'm in with myself, how I view myself is the energy I'm putting out there to the world.
Right. Yep.
And even if people don't pick up on it, I'm still receiving through the filter that I believe about myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So physical relationships, spirituality. I'd completely unplugged from my higher, you know, for me, I was raised as a Christian. And, you know, I don't know if it's right or not. I just know that I have faith and I feel that God, or what I call God, is with me. Mm-hmm. And that's an intentional decision to live my life with a sense of there's a higher purpose greater than me. And there's always more that I can give back to the world.
Right.
You know, so spirituality. And then next is career slash learning, because we're, you know, lifelong learning, curiosity, and, you know, and we need career. And then finally, the last piece is finances. Mm-hmm. And really getting clear about finding a sense of balance. So I started paying attention to what I was doing. Around this time, I also became the importer distributor for a product company from Davinace products out of Parma, Italy. Mm. So I'm the importer distributor. I set up this company called Northeast Distribution Company. I go to my bank, I, you know, set it up. I'm buying international stuff. I don't know how to do any of this. I'm sitting there with the banker. She's explaining it to me. I call Old Dominion truck lines and I say, I have to have products picked up on a port in New York. I have no idea how to do this. What do I do? And this wonderful woman spent like an hour on the phone with me and gave me her number and said, call me back and I'll continue teaching you how to get the products from the port to Pittsburgh.
Wow.
So yeah, that was, it was really interesting, you know, but you know, the product companies are very competitive. It was around this time that Paul Mitchell became non-professional. You know, we spent 15 years promoting these professional only products using mm-hmm. our relationships of trust with our clients. And then all of a sudden you can buy them in the drugstore.
Right.
And we built up the market for them and then they pulled it out from under us. Mm-hmm. And it really affected a lot of beauty industry businesses. You know, I lost the health benefits for my staff that year. Mm. So it was really important to me. And through this organization I was involved with, that's how I, you know, got involved with the product company. Mm-hmm. But as I was traveling around the country opening accounts as a value add, I thought, well, time's always an issue in the beauty industry. For a value add, I'll create a workshop out of what I just had to teach myself. And it will be like a time management course. Mm. It started getting more traction than the products.
Hmm. Wow.
It was, you know, and what I would say to the business owners, hey, I'm running a ballroom. I'll meet with you the night before, tell me what the main issues are in your businesses. And I'd meet with four or five salon owners, but, you know, spa owners. Spas were just, there were maybe like two of them in primary cities at that time. Mm-hmm. And tell me what the issues are. Bring your staff in tomorrow. I'll do product knowledge in the morning. And in the afternoon, I'll do a workshop. So was really fun. One day I'm in Tampa, Florida. I'm on a tour of like five cities. Can't even remember where I'm driving or which airport I'm flying into, you know. Mm-hmm. And all it occurs to me, I'm always pretty careful about what at that point, like what I would say on stage to not want to offend anybody. And I share this story of how to get over self-limiting beliefs and really start to trust myself. I had to reinvent my relationship with my father. Mm-hmm. And I made a decision that it might not be that it wasn't that I was never good enough for him. It might be that his standard for me was higher. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I changed that vocabulary in my head, I wouldn't even allow myself to think anything else but that, my life started to change. I started to relax. I stopped judging myself so much. I stopped judging other people mm-hmm. because I was only judging other people because I was comparing myself to them. It's right. Why we judge other people, right? Mm-hmm. We judge them because we're measuring ourselves against them.
Right.
So that was a big shift. There was a guy in the audience who started to cry when I said that. And, you know, when you're in the front of the room and somebody's crying in the audience, it tweaks you. Mm-hmm. So afterwards he came up and he was teary eyed and he said, I really want to thank you. It never occurred to me. My father has never accepted me. I'm a Black gay hairdresser. Mm. I've never been good enough for my father. He said, I didn't know that I could change that. And we just stood there and hugged, like one of those moments you'll remember forever. Like I remember the suit that I had on that day, you know? And I came out of that and I thought I could go deeper with my speaking. So, you know, I mean, jump ahead. I came back out of that year and I'm like, I want to create a much bigger concept of a, like a destination spa. I bought a big building, converted it into a spa in a suburb of Pittsburgh, sold my other businesses, gave up the rights to the product company because it really wasn't fun for me. Mm-hmm. And I have a rule, if it's not fun, I can't do it. And that was not fun.
So, I love that. Love that rule.
Yeah. It was really good. So I went, I opened three spa locations and I started being invited to speak at like women's growth conferences or universities. And it was like, this is so ironic. I don't even have a college degree. And here I am telling, you know, people in graduate programs how to grow their businesses. And I loved it. I really loved it.
I love that.
So yes, you know, and all the personal stuff that goes along with it. My marriage ended. The father of my children and I decided that we would spend the rest of our lives having the most successful divorce we ever were aware of. And it was a conversation. We didn't have a wildly successful marriage, but we still love each other. We're the parents of children. We still care about each other. We're just a misalignment between us. Mm-hmm. And if we, you know, the summer after we got divorced, I went to the beach with my in-laws.
Wow.
You know, like my friends were all, what are you doing? I said, are you kidding me? My children need to see that we all still love each other. We just do it from different homes. And, you know, to this day, we're all very, very close. And my children have benefited from that.
That's beautiful. Yeah, I love to hear that. That's awesome. Wow. Thank you for that. So many directions we could go in now. Very, very cool. I didn't even know a lot about that, about your background. So thank you for sharing. So you were in the salon, the spa business, and then you started writing and, I mean, speaking. How did you get into the writing? Was that just a natural progression from there?
It, you know, I had another, you know, we do these pivotal things. I spoke about Landmark earlier. In the early 2000s, I put myself in a program out of Toronto, based out of Toronto, called the Strategic Coach. It's an entrepreneurial growth program, fabulous, run by a guy named Dan Sullivan. And we were in there in a workshop. We had quarterly workshops. And the workshop was, what are the bottlenecks in your business? Now, I'm like one of the only usually the only female in the room, in, you know, with a room full of businessmen and clearly the only one with the spa business. A lot of people from financial services industry were in there with me. But, you know, I started thinking I had to physically close my locations down about mid-December because online gift cards did not yet exist. We didn't even know what they, like it wasn't even on anybody's radar. So it would be Christmas Eve and I would have people calling at 8 o'clock at night saying, can you please like, wait, I'm on my way. I didn't get my wife a Christmas present. And there were so many men coming in to buy gift cards. You know, we would do 20% of our annual revenue in the month of December in gift card sales because that was the advertising that I did. It's the perfect gift. It's the perfect thing to do. It's not just what women do. It's the gift that gives twice. They're happy the day they get the gift certificate. They're happy the day they come into the spa. So, you know, we're outsourcing your pampering. I had all these like slogans, you know?
Yeah.
And, the bottleneck was that. And I started thinking, what if you could be on my website and print out a barcoded numbered piece of paper, like a gift certificate that we hand, that we mail people and we, you know, but it would be able to print out. So I came back to Pittsburgh. I talked to a couple different code writers. They all laughed at me. They're like, online printable gift cards, you know, not in our lifetime. Huh. And I believed in my idea. So this is a really important point for your listeners here. People were laughing me out the door. And I believed in my idea. I'm not from the technology industry. I'm not from the finance industry. I'm from the beauty industry. It's like, it reminds me of the movie Blink. The guy who, you know, invented the delayed windshield wipers because he had an eye issue. I had a problem in my business that I needed to solve. So I was introduced to the people who at that time were designing Dell Computers websites. And he said to me, the technology just doesn't exist for that. You know, maybe in 10 years it will. And he gave me a really big number for us to start to build a prototype that's not going to function exactly the way you want it to, but it will be close. And we cannot 100% guarantee it'll work. So I found this group of kids from Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh. I was introduced to them through a mutual friend. And I said, if I give you $20,000, can you rebuild my website? And can you do it with this? And they said, well, the technology doesn't exist. Let us put our heads together. And they were like in this incubator business program at CMU. Well, they worked on it for 6 months and it went live on Christmas Eve. And I changed all of our advertising the last week before Christmas. We had billboards, radio, TV, and print. We didn't really have internet advertising at that time. And I took our phone number off of everything. And I only left up our website with these big bursts and all the ads and on the commercials that I recorded myself because I was too cheap to pay talent. You know, you can now purchase and print your gift card from the convenience of your own computer. And it was like unheard of. We closed that night on Christmas Eve. When I woke up the next morning, we had done $21,000 in gift card sales overnight.
Wow.
Cha-ching, you know, and people had their gift cards. There was no lost it in the mail, no postage expense, no staff expense, no utilities, no nothing, paper, ink, all of that. So I put out press releases and in the beauty industry, started getting calls from around the country, started selling the service to other businesses, formed another company. And that was really exciting. But again, I didn't know what I didn't know. I didn't properly protect my intellectual property. And maybe 2 years into it, 3 years into it, I'm being interviewed by an international magazine, iSpa Association, you know, most strongest, most respected international spa organization about this amazing concept that I have. So I forget that they can say anything that you say in an interview, right? And I'm on the phone for over an hour with the woman and she's asking me these questions like, this is fascinating. How does it work? And I'm telling her like the process. And I didn't get to fact check the story. So when I'm reading the story, it comes in, I'm like, yes, we're the cover story. You know, this is so awesome. And then I start reading the story and I'm like, oh, no. I said way too much in this interview. Sure enough, a year later, I had competitors coming out of the woodwork. And, you know, I talked to legal teams and they were like, everybody's within their rights to do what they want to do. So, you know, I mean, I kept my clients for about 8 years and then eventually technology caught up. But so that revolutionized that idea that I had. You know, by the end of the year, somebody else might have come up with a similar idea. And, you know, 2 years later, everybody was selling online gift cards. But that idea revolutionized the beauty industry. And that, again, got way more attention for me. And so I started thinking, I have all these great stories and, you know, things happen, life changes. You know, I got remarried. I at a certain point, I started thinking, what is my future going to be? You know, I love the spa industry. It has provided so much opportunity for me. I get to speak on business growth. I was known for starting and scaling businesses. You know, Adrian, it's fascinating. Less than 2% of women can scale a business to the $1 million mark. Less than 2% to $1 million. And that doesn't seem like that big of a number, but it's a huge benchmark. And there, the other number, I haven't looked at the statistics lately, but it's like around 4.5% of all businesses ever do over $1 million or over in revenue. Surprisingly small number.
That is small.
So, and I started, you know, as I built out locations, everything in my company was systematized. Like if I get hit by a bus tomorrow, all of my employees still have jobs. The company lives. My children have something to inherit.
That's great. It's not dependent on you for its success. You know, like a lot of small businesses where it's like, if you're not there, it's not running the same.
That's exactly it. The owner operator. I mean, and then at the end of the day, what do you have to sell? What's your exit strategy? You know, you, and if you work for yourself, unless you've been, you know, diligent about setting up your retirement plans, you're not getting a retirement check. you know, right. So you've got to be able to sell your business because that is your retirement.
Right.
So I didn't know what I was really building at the time. And then when I would teach about it, people would start telling me how helpful it was. So, you know, jump way ahead, many changes in life, many wonderful things have happened. And, in 2018. So we have a second home. We had a second home. We live here in Georgia full time at on a golf resort on a lake in Georgia. Mm-hmm. I was down here talking to my neighbors who, you know, we were friends that would see them a couple times a year, would come and spend some time in our house. And one of the guys, John Fenton, said to me, "What are you going to do? Are you going to like retire from your spa business?" And I said, "You know, I have a fabulous manager who really is running everything. I really want to spend my time speaking full time, helping entrepreneurs learn how to overcome the mindset withholds and the business things that they just don't know that they don't know. I really want to help entrepreneurs grow." Mm-hmm. And he said, "Well, you need to write a book." And I said, "You know, I have so many stories. I've had a book in my head for 10 years about all these things." And he said, "Oh, let me introduce you to my mentor, Joel Bauer." So mm-hmm. I think you also know Joel.
Yeah.
Brilliant, brilliant mind.
Yeah.
And I went to a weekend, an introductory weekend in Los Angeles, registered for his course, went to the course, had a major epiphany about my self-worth. Mm. Major breakthrough where I thought I had this stuff figured out. And, you know, then there it is in your face. Mm. And as soon as it happened, I mean, you know, I'm like, I'm not a crier. My whole life, like I fixed things. I don't cry over them. Uh-huh. You know, I was a single mother with two little boys for most of my life. Mm-hmm. And so there wasn't time to be emotional. There wasn't time to PMS. What's that? Like, I'm sorry, that just doesn't exist in my world. You deal with your stuff and, you yeah. know, move on. Uh-huh. And that was the sort of hardline attitude that I had taken. And as soon as I had this epiphany about how hard I was on myself, I just started sobbing like in front of a whole room full of people. Mm. And it felt like this intense release,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, and it felt safe. So I left Joel's course that day on the airplane. I started writing my book. I found somebody who would help me publish it, Colin Campbell, guy out of Canada, brilliant guy. And I wrote the whole book. And then I was at another event in Los Angeles, and another person I think we mutually know, Jeff Faldalen, and his wife, Renee, were there. And I didn't know them at all. Renee asked me for a business card. Jeff contacted me, and he said, "You represent," and he's a coach. He's a business growth coach as well. But I wasn't like formally coaching at that time. So anyhow, I meet him, I do a couple sessions with him, and it's like, again, life-changing. I start looking back at my relationship with my father, my relationship with men, my relationship with myself, the archetypes that I have at play. You know, it's easy to be a victim because you have a funky childhood story. Mm. You know, it's easy to go after things that look bright and shiny. Because, you know, I'm big on the archetypes, the mm-hmm. human archetypes, you know, the four primary ones being the childhood, the victim, the prostitute, and the saboteur. And I really started seeing how those archetypes were affecting my life. Mm. And, you know, got really rigorous about doing deeper levels of self-work. And I got the book back, my first book, Streamline Success. In case you are doing a visual,
this, there it is. Yep.
I got the first book, Streamline Success, back, and I read it and I went, this was written from a different perspective point. So I rewrote the whole book, sent it back to the editor, and it published in February of 19. And went to international bestseller. And that changed the game for my speaking,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, some really cool stuff started happening. I was invited to run a workshop for a chain of fast food, fast casual category of restaurants in the Northeast with many locations. And the CEO walked in right before I was about to run the workshop on conflict resolution in the service industry. And I'm like, here's the CEO of this big company. So yeah, I got through my workshop and he loved it. And afterwards he said, you know, if you have a book on this, I'd like to buy one for every manager in our system. You're talking about concepts I've never heard about. So I went home that day and started writing the second book, Conflict Revelation. It launched during the same week of George Floyd's murder.
Oh, wow.
And coincidentally, you know, nobody could have predicted the horrific events of everything, you know, and it's during COVID and we're, you know, it was just such a crazy time. Everybody was so unsettled and everybody was so consumed by the experience of uncertainty. And that's when the book launched and it went to international bestseller in nine different categories.
Wow. Amazing.
And, yeah. And it's really interesting. The second book, you know, it's about conflict, but it's really about embracing that which we resist in order to resolve conflict.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's so crazy. I'm just realizing now I never got your books and I haven't read them. So I'm that's going to change. I'm writing that down right now. Amazing. Wow. So from there, I mean, that was what, 2 years ago?
That was just a couple years ago. Yes. And so, as soon as I started working with Jeff, he said to me, you really need to be formally coaching people. And I said, you know, I have enough issues of my own and my own staff. I don't know if I want to take on anybody else's. He said, Dorothy, you've been coaching people. You know, it's 1980 that I went in business. So this year it's going to be 42 years. So, you know, this was 3 years ago. It was like 39 years. He said, you have been coaching people for 39 years. How many people who came to work with you have you supported in going to leave you and open their own business? And you did it with ease. And I said, yes, tons. I've employed over 1,000 people. In all these years, in all these businesses that weren't all in the beauty industry. And so he said, how long do you keep employees? And I said, well, I still have the first employee I ever hired when I opened this company in 1997. And in an industry where turnover is just rampant, in the beauty industry, turnovers, it's the biggest issue that there is. And I didn't have that issue. And he said, I think you really could help people with this. So, sure enough, like literally a week later, somebody who's following me on Instagram on my Streamline Success page reaches out to me and says, would you consider taking me as a mentor? A guy in the technology business who's still in college, who's about to leave college to go blow up his business. And, so I started working with him and that led to someone else and someone else and someone else. And then I was speaking for University of Pittsburgh. And there was a woman in the audience who happened to own a nail salon and she contacted me on LinkedIn. So we set up the discovery call and, you know, my price is very high. It's you're getting 42 years of proven experience and there are days my clients get off the call and they hate me and they want to cry. But they produce results. And I'm not here to be your friend. I'm here for you to produce the results you want. And doesn't matter what means we're going to use to get there, but by God, if you're working with me, we're going to get there. So she contacts me and I said, it would be so much fun to work with you because you're from the same industry that I grew up in. So in 9 months, she had a 57% increase in revenue. She opened a second location. I mean, it was like phenomenal results. So she would refer people. I mean, it's just crazy how it happened. So as a result, I started encouraging her to coach. And she's like, what would I coach on? I said, Kate, open your notebook from the first day we worked together. Every piece of homework I gave you is a coaching frame for you to be teaching salon owners how to do for their business what I taught you to do for yours. And she's like, why aren't you doing that? And I'm like, I don't want to focus just on the beauty industry. I want to go bigger and broader. So she went live with her coaching business in January of this year, in her first month out of the gate, she made $16,000 selling people into a program to help them make more money in their beauty and in their beauty business. So that's what I'm up to, Adrian.
I love it. That's really cool. That's really cool. So Dorothy, tell me, what do you love most about what you're doing now?
On the professional level, I love watching people have massive breakthroughs, massive release around giving up the painful childhood story that has been driving them their whole life that they didn't even realize was the shadow. Watching people go from living in an act of wanting to show up and look a certain way when we're dying inside, you know, we're just dying inside, leading people on the pathway that allows them to see it doesn't need to be that way. And when we stay in a state of curiosity about, why am I triggered? Why are my shoulders up in my ears? Why am I tense? Why am I not sleeping at night? When we stay in a state of curiosity versus judgment instead of woe is me, but where is this coming from? Mm-hmm. Watching the shift that creates in people's lives, and you know, business is connected to it, and how their businesses massively explode as a result of getting the personal pieces of life balance in order. That's the career side that I love. On the personal side, I made a decision. You know, my father died when I was 21, so he never got to really live to see anything of what I've created with my life. But my mother lived for a lot of years. And when my mother got sick, I really started thinking how important it is to have a complete relationship with every single person. That when anytime I'm interacting, that if that phone call ended or that visit ended or whatever the engagement was, if something happened to me or to that person, let's just say something happened to that person, excuse me, there is nothing left unsaid. There's no reason to cry at the funeral. All there is reason to celebrate the relationship that we had. Mm. And it doesn't mean I wouldn't grieve and miss this person terribly in my life. And I started that. My mom had a massive stroke. And then I learned there was no money in her bank accounts. And, you know, my brother and I were stunned to learn this. And it occurred to me that 100% of her living expenses in a self-pay assisted living home were falling on my shoulders. And here I am, you know, at this point, I'm single with two. My sons were adolescents at that point. Mm-hmm. And I just sat at my desk that day and I just prayed, like, God, please give me the brain and the strength and the courage and the skills to know how to make enough money to keep my mother comfortable. Because when she dies, I want to know that I have done every single thing I could in my life. And it forced me to be a better business person. And in that year, I doubled the revenue in my company because my mother's comfort was the higher purpose for my business. So, you know, I look at the hardest things that I've had to go through. So personally, what I love the most is that my intention is to always be complete with every single person I'm in a relationship with, that people know that I love them. If I've ever done anything in my life that was out of integrity or hurtful, whether I knew it or not, I've gone back and cleaned up so many things. And you know, I would call people who I would remember something that happened when I was 24. And they would say, I don't even remember what you're talking about. And I, you know, here it would be 15, 20 years later. And I would say, this is hanging around in my background, like this low hum of negativity in my thoughts. I owe you an apology. And I mean, you know, most people would laugh about it. And there would be some people who would say, yeah, you know, I just never figured out what happened between us. So going back and cleaning up those messes so that if you're on your deathbed, like when I'm on my deathbed, I die with a clear conscience. And if there's anybody listening to this who needs to clear something with me, please let me know. But when I get into bed at night, you know, I pray and I reflect and I think, have I lived my life with integrity today? Mm-hmm. Do the people in my life know that I love them and honor them? And that kind of intentional decision is very different than I ever would have pictured my life would have been when I was being beaten almost to death in an abusive relationship, believing that I deserved to be treated that way, way back when, you know?
Yeah, that's powerful. That's very powerful. So, you know, you talked about limiting beliefs, self-limiting beliefs, and like the shadow. Go into that a little bit more. I know that's a whole podcast episode in itself, but what can you say about how people can begin to get over their self-limiting beliefs? And, you know, people talk a lot about shadow work these days, but what does that mean to you? What do you say about that?
You know, if my interpretation of shadow may not be what somebody else's, but I feel like it's always the black cloud, the negative thing that's hanging around when there's unresolved conflict. And the conflict really starts within ourselves. Am I good enough? Am I smart enough? And this all begins from very early childhood. And I spend a lot of time with my clients working through these things to release the greatness and brilliance that's within each and every single one of us that we don't allow to pour forth because we live by the story that we believe to be true about ourselves from our childhood. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you grew up in a family where, let's just say you had and I didn't grow up in this family, but I didn't have alcohol or abuse as an issue in my family. We had other issues. We had fidelity issues and honesty issues. And that was the energy I grew up with. And always so grateful that I had a good aunt and uncle who brought me to their house whenever they could, that it was a very different kind of energy there that I could delineate between this makes sense, but when I go home, this doesn't make sense. And I feel so fortunate for that. Mm-hmm. Where for many years, it was like, my parents didn't love me enough to want me at home on the weekends. That's because I'm so fucked up and I must've been such a terrible kid and blah, 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 blah. And I lived my life believing that I wasn't worthy of being loved for many, many years. So I started doing the self-development work. And that is, you know, I spoke to earlier, the filters, you know, because I believe that about myself, you know, I kept repeating the pattern over and over and over, because this is what we do as humans. Our ego wants us to create pleasure and avoid pain. So we see the person and there are these energetic, subconscious, psychic hooks that attract us to these people when we are, you know, living out of our wounds. And so I would keep reinventing the same scenarios of, you know, my sister and I, thankfully we've overcome all of this at this point, but, you know, I had an older sister who was very physically abusive to me. She was mean, you know, her life was the life of Riley. And then I came along as the son planned pregnancy and she got knocked off the throne and wasn't having that. And so I had this belief that my role in life was to be taken advantage of and hurt emotionally and hurt physically, and not even being aware of that, you know, we're living it, right? We don't see it because we're living it.
Right.
And, starting to really look at how am I setting up my life to attract this into it? Because this is the energy I give off. And I believe, oh, if only he would stop hitting me, our relationship would be perfect. Oh, if only he'd stop taking my money, our relationship would be perfect. Oh, if only he would come home at night, our relationship would be perfect. And then at a certain point, you're like, you know, now I've got And the father of my children, again, wasn't those things. We just had a different, very different alignment about what we wanted out of life. Mm-hmm. And he was a wonderful father. And so the relationships that I would create, it would be, Adrian, it was crazy. And we do this as humans. We create trouble for ourselves. Because at a subconscious level, we have to prove to ourselves we can fix it. Because we believe if we can fix it in the other person or the relationship or the business or the deal, that we can fix ourselves. And so we look externally for validation that we're going to be okay. And it's never going to work that way. It's looking internally and being so clear about ourselves and what we're really deeply afraid of. And only then, only once we go into that place of zero ground 30, that we can really look in the mirror and say, this is who I am. And this is who I attract into my life. And this is what I'm terrified of. And this is what, you know, I need to break bad about. Like it's all of that. Mm-hmm. And then starting to do the work that we spend our whole lives protecting ourselves from, because it's so painful and gut-wrenching, because it makes us have to look at the people who raised us and say, that wasn't really right what they did to me. Mm-hmm. That wasn't right. And I still love them, but they're not perfect, because children believe that our parents are perfect and we're the ones with the problems. We believe that we're the one who's responsible for everything that went wrong. We believe it's our fault that, you know, our mother drinks or our father shoots heroin. We believe it's our fault that our father is banging our 12-year-old babysitter when our mother takes a sleeping pill and goes to bed. All of these things, children make it their fault. Yeah. And it's not. We just live our life as if it is. So those are the self-limiting beliefs that I'm mostly talking about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And is that an ongoing process in your view? Like, it's not like you get to the point where, okay, I'm perfectly healed and everything's perfect and now I can go on. It's like, it's an ongoing process of, you know, you feed your body every day. You need to feed your mind, all these things as well. Do you resonate with that?
It's definitely an evolution. I mean, look, I'm 61 years old and I still get to work on myself every single day, but here's what happens. The tension that we feel, like, okay, so let's just say that we have body issues and nobody else would look at us and think that we have body issues, but we judge ourselves and we're so hard on ourselves. We're so hard in the beauty industry. This is rampant.
Right.
A lot of this goes on in the beauty industry. We do not believe that we are this beautiful, this strong, this healthy, this confident. So we're always like judging ourselves. We're judging ourselves because we feel that other people judge us because we compare ourselves to other people. When we are able to shift out of that and start to see why we judge ourselves, where that came from, it releases the pressure. And then the ultimate thing is when we can go back, the day that I made the decision to forgive my father for all of the emotional abuse, abandonment, everything that happened, the day that I made the decision to empathize with him, when he was long dead at this point, rather than being angry that I didn't get the father I wanted, mm-hmm. my entire life changed. The pressure goes away. Like mm-hmm. the pressure just goes away. You know, here's the other thing. When we look at people and they really trigger us, and we see this so much in the political cycles, we look at people on TV, and as our blood is boiling over that person, it's only because what we can't stand in them is the wound within us that we can't look at. If it wasn't a wound within us, we wouldn't be triggered by it. We would just look at that person and go, isn't he a pompous asshole? You know, but when we buy into and we take it personally, it's because our ego won't allow us to see it in ourselves. You know, I think it's AA or NA. I'm not sure. There's a saying, if you spot it, you got it. Mm-hmm. If you see it in somebody else, it's only an unresolved wound within you.
Yeah. Wow. And it makes sense because the ego is what's separating us from, you know, the causing the separation when really, you know, there's so much more that we're connected on and have in similarity to each other instead of the differences. So it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. You know, I mean, when we went through the MITT courses together and they were brilliant, fabulous, you know, I was, you know, when Jeff, my coach, and he and I actually, he's my coach and we co-coach courses together. Mm. And we were just invited to coach in Malaysia. So I'm pretty excited about that. Awesome. So when he said to me, check out this course, I think you'll like it. I was like, oh, Jeff, you know, I spent a lot of years in Landmark. I did strategic coach. You're my coach. I've read 1,000 books on this. I teach on this. I think I got it. And he's like, no, I think you're going to see something. You know, and so I went into it. Really, my intention, Adrian, was I just want to watch how they coach people. I want to learn what I can learn about coaching. You know, lifelong position of curiosity, because it's fascinating to learn. And I get in there, and I start seeing how much I analyze situations rather than just connecting at the heart level. Mm-hmm. And that was my big breakthrough in the basic course. And then we did advanced, and, you know, advanced is all about feedback. And I'm like, oh my God, this is how I show up in the world. And I started to see why I built businesses, because I was so afraid to let anybody in at an intensely close personal level. Like, I had my best childhood friend, she moved, we moved. And like, I didn't ever want to go through the hurt of losing close friends again. So if I created a business where the same people came every day and we could get to know each other, I would build in me like a comfort zone around me. And I really saw that in the advanced course. And I was like, isn't that amazing? Why I chose to be an employer, which was always my favorite part about business. It was providing employment. Safe employment, you know, primarily single women. And then we went through the LP journey, which was ridiculous, life-changing, intense. And I wouldn't have done it any other way. And it was one of the best things I ever did. My big breakthrough there was around receiving. And, you know, it's like, come on, I speak on a stage, I get applause, I write books, I'm on radio shows, TV shows. I could never receive. And it was because I was not conditioned to receive acknowledgement as a child. Mm-hmm. And I thought I had overturned every stone there was. When we aren't conditioned to hear positive feedback, we tend to work ourselves into the ground. Looking for positive feedback, because again, it goes into that we're looking externally for what we don't give ourselves internally. Like, enough will never be enough if it's not enough for us first.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. So going to back to the business world, entrepreneurial coaching, what would be some advice that you would give an entrepreneur just starting out, just beginning their journey?
Just beginning, do it your way. You know, know the industry that you're in, know it really well, know what you don't like about the industry in, and start to create a different way, a way that sort of has solutions that don't lead to the things you don't like in your business, in your industry, and start implementing those things in your business. Like, I was always aware of competition, but I never paid attention to it. I paid attention to what we were doing in my business. What did my staff need? What did my clients need? What did my community need? And then, you know, big once with the gift card thing, what does my industry need? My industry was having the same bottleneck I was having. They just didn't know it because they weren't in the strategic coach course to figure it out. Mm-hmm. So it's really doing it your way, doing it with integrity. If you come from a business that's primarily a cash business, claim your cash, pay your taxes. If you're operating under the table, you always have a tabletop over top of you. And when you go to sleep at night, you don't feel proud of yourself because you're getting away with something. And while you might feel clever in the moment, you know, I went through a random audit in probably 1994, and our industry gets randomly audited a lot. And my accountant went to represent me, and she said, stay by the phone. And I got like 27 phone calls or some crazy amount of phone calls that day. I had to explain down to small, you know, dollars and cents on things. Mm-hmm. And the auditor told her, this is the first time in my history I can remember auditing a beauty industry where the owner didn't owe the IRS one penny. Operating your business with the utmost sense of integrity, as you start to grow your staff, really pay attention to your training process, because if you think it in your head, it doesn't mean your employees know it. And if you aren't training them exactly on what your process is, your documented, hear this, documented process. Everything in your business is a process, and you got to write it down and document it, because if you get hit by a bus tomorrow, somebody needs to know what to do. If they are not very well trained, tested, and accountable for operating within the parameters of your rules, they make rules up themselves, and you as the business owner have to clean it up. You get to pay the price. And, you know, as the owner goes, so go the followers. So if you're sloppy in your business, your employees will be sloppy. If you're disrespectful of their time, of their money, of their capabilities, they won't respect you. It's all energy. It's all energy. So, you know, that's really important. Find mentors who have already done what it is you want to do at a bigger scope than what you're currently doing, and pick their brains. Ask questions. You know, I would say the one thing that helped me grow my business faster than anything was that I was never embarrassed or ashamed or considered that I didn't look smart if I asked questions. Mm. And soon as I would meet somebody who I considered to be more successful or having at the level of success that I envisioned myself to be, I would start asking, what inspired you? What do you do? What are the best practices that you could share with me? And people love to talk about themselves and their businesses. Mm-hmm. So, you know, putting yourself out there. Somebody reached out to me the other day and said, how do I really start my speaking? And I said, call up all the local schools that are back in the classroom right now and invite yourself to speak on career day. Mm. Get comfortable practicing in front of little kids. It's what I did when I decided I wanted to get comfortable speaking. I called up my beauty school and I thought, what more of a comfortable place? I just want to go there and tell my story mm-hmm. of where I am. And I was 27 at that time. You know, I think I was on my third or fourth business. I'd lost the fire, recovered, you know, anybody, when we put ourselves in a comfortable environment and never speaking about what we don't really know, like I could get up and do a keynote that could last for 4 hours if it's on the topics I know. And I'm not nervous at all. I'm not tweaked by the audience because I know it. It's who I am. Mm-hmm. We get nervous speaking in front of people when we don't know our content and we're trying to memorize it. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of business owners are like, I don't have the courage to like lead a staff meeting. Well, if you're not leading a staff meeting, who is, you know? I teach a workshop called Smart Women Speak Up, and it's really to get women over their fears. So many women have a fear because we're afraid of what we look like, what our hair looks like, especially for ethnic women. Oh my God, the world sees me through the filter that I see myself through. I'm never happy with my hair. That's your story. That's not really true. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. Yeah.
Love that. Since you mentioned that you didn't even go to college, and it was funny how you're speaking at colleges and everything, what do you say about young people, like people in high school right now that are considering going to college? Like, what's your advice for that? I know it's kind of changed these days. What would you say to somebody considering, do I go to college? Do I not? What do I do with my life?
I think you have to really start to think about what you want to do. You know, I speak a lot at colleges, and the question that I'm always asked is, I want to start a business, but how do I know what I want to do? So here's what I Here's what I feel about that. I mean, when I was a kid, I loved fixing the hair on my baby dolls. I used to cut my neighbor's hair when I was like in sixth grade. Wow. I loved doing it and I felt excited when I did it. So I've never felt like I've worked a day in my life. You know, I haven't been behind a chair doing hair for 20 some years now, but you know, it's long hours in the beauty, it's long, hard hours. So find the thing that you do. If you love to ride your mountain bike, you love it, it's all you care about, and you understand you can go on the internet and build your own bike, open a bike shop. You know, go take courses on that. So it's really pairing what you internally feel free when you're doing with externally what you choose as your career. If you love numbers and you need to go to school to get your, you know, to become a CPA, then you're going to do that. So one thing I really do wish that there was more focus on the vocational vo-tech schools, yep, where people could learn crafts like carpentry and plumbing, mm-hmm, and electrician and meat cutting. And, you know, we have other people pouring over the borders every day who are taking those jobs because somehow we feel that we might be above them. And how above it is it when pretty much every head of lettuce you pick up in the grocery store was picked by somebody who wasn't born in this country? Because they're coming here and seeing the opportunity, which is wonderful. I mean, I love it. I love that there's opportunity. There's opportunity everywhere for everybody.
Right.
It's just, you know, finding it. So, you know, when my oldest son didn't want to go to college and he said, you know, his dad went to college and has had a very successful career. And he said, well, you didn't go to college and look at how good you did. And I said, I had to learn so many things the hard way. Like when I was opening my third location of my spa, I realized I didn't know how to do a budget. Like I had never had a reason to do a budget. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I remember thinking, crap, if I went back to college, if I went back and got a business degree, I bet I'd learn that. And then, you know, I just went to some friends of mine and said, hey, I think I know how to do a budget, but I really don't know. Can you show me what your budget looks like? And I looked at it and went, oh, okay, I'll go make mine for what I need. But It's, you know, you're going to be an employee. You're going to be an entrepreneur. Pick your path. Do what you love. Have fun every day. You know, how I came up with this rule, if it's not fun, I can't do it. So, you know, a lot of women are single right now raising children, a lot of fathers single raising children, one parent households. Mm-hmm. Julian was little and laundry, you know, laundry is a big issue with kids. And I was saying like, here, honey, watch cartoons until I get the laundry done. And then it hit me. Why would I want my children to be in unity with cartoons when he could be, you know, in relationship with me? So I turned laundry into a game, taught him how to count, how to spell colors, how to mix colors, you know, lights to darks, and let's make a crescendo of color here, how to pair socks, how to cast. I mean, I taught him so much stuff. Laundry became a game. And I'm like, this is an analogy here for life. Yeah. So if there's something I don't know how to do and it's causing tension, I hire somebody or I find somebody to teach me how to do it until the tension goes away and I'm comfortable doing it and I'm not judging myself that I don't know how to do it anymore. Or I really look at it and go, I need to delegate this. I need to delegate this. Delegating for the upcoming entrepreneur, delegation is key. You can't do it all yourself. You have to give it away, but you have to give it to the right person and hold them accountable.
Absolutely. So just a random question I just thought of, do you have a specific morning or night routine that you follow every day?
Pretty much. I've always been an early to bed, early to rise kind of girl. Uh-huh. You know, during the years that my children were young and I was growing my businesses, I would wake up at 5:30. I had a treadmill in my house. I'd get on the treadmill. I'd put a project in my head for a day or a conversation, and I would think through it. And 15 minutes later, I was sweating and I had my answer in my head. But, you know, over the years, it's changed. So I wake up now, when I wake up, before I open my eyes, I put myself into a state of gratitude, being thankful for the fact that I can get up and dress myself. You know, being grateful for the fact that I have clean, warm water, that I can afford the food I want to eat, that I have nice cars in my garage, that I don't have debt. It, you know, I go into a state of gratitude for the things, the circumstances, and the people and the opportunities in my life. And sometimes I'll spend 20 seconds on, sometimes I'll spend 20 minutes. It depends on where my brain takes me. And I'll set an intention for the day. Like, I knew we were going to speak together today. And it was like, my intention is that your listeners will get value from my story. Like, that was my intention. So I hope that happens.
No doubt.
But,
no doubt,
you know, yeah. And then I get up and, you know, sometimes I'll go to spin class or go to the gym, or I walk a lot in the morning. And, you know, like, I was a I was a macrobiotic vegetarian for years, and then I got really hungry for hot dogs, and the hot dogs weren't doing it. So I went to a deli, I bought a hot dog, I stood in the deli, I ate it, I turned around, I bought another one, and, you know, now I'm like, you know,
that's funny. But
yeah, it's really funny. I mean, I try to eat clean and healthy and manage my alcohol intent, and just because I don't like how I feel the next morning. But yeah, it's, you know, I try to spend the day that when I get into bed that night, it's like, it was a good day. And if it wasn't a good day, you know, do I need to clear anything with anybody? Do I need to do something? What do I need to do differently tomorrow to feel differently tomorrow when I get into bed? So I think about these things.
Going back to the concept of work-life balance and entrepreneurship, you know, like, do those things mix? Is it possible to be balanced when you're really trying to start a business and hustle and work extra hard to do whatever it takes? Or do you kind of have to find that balance after a while? Like, what's your experience been with that?
You got to work it out. I mean, when you have children, it adds a whole new layer of complexity to it. Before children come into the picture, you have so much freedom, you don't even know how much time you have available to yourself. I remember before I had children thinking, man, I'm so busy. And then, like, after my father died, like, I sort of became my mother's crutch, you know, like, and my joke was, I would cut hair all day. I would go home. I would cut the grass, cut the hedges at her house. And then I would go out and cut the rug with my girlfriends in a club at night, you know? So, but it felt like busy all the time. And then I got married, and then it was busier. And then I had a child, and it was like, oh my God, I didn't know how much freedom I had before. And then I had a second child, and you know, then it changes. So I believe that it's very possible because I created it. Here's what I want to say. If you have relationships in your life that cause drama, unload those. Unload those. And if it's somebody in your family, you get to start to change the conversation that you don't accept and take a sense of ownership for the bullshit story that somebody else is trying to drag you into every day because they want you to feel sorry for them. You know, people always say, how can I build a relationship while I'm building a company? Well, if you're waiting until your company is built to meet the one, you probably are going to miss the one while you're trying to get yourself perfect. And then you're out looking for perfection. It really comes down to communication. I believe that, you know, my children were raised in an entrepreneurial family. What we talked about at night was what they learned during the day and what happened in my business. And it's just, you make it work. And if you think that you're going to separate your business life from your personal life, it really doesn't happen. But having said that, I want to be very clear for the entrepreneur who really usually works like a maniac, especially when you're in rapid growth, it's really important to take time. I mean, I remember when I made the decision, I have to take one day out of every seven. That's a completely free day where I unplug and I do absolutely not one thing around my business. I'm going to do the things on that day that I thought I would wait until retirement to do. I'm going to start hiking. I'm going to take cooking classes. I'm going to read. I learned how to sail. Like, sailing was never even on my thing. My son got a job at a sailing club and I thought, wow, isn't this cool? He should learn how to sail. And he's like, well, I don't want to learn how to sail a boat. And I thought, well, I'm afraid of big water and I'm not a strong swimmer, but if I take sailing class, I bet my sons will. They never took sailing class. I got hooked and became a very competitive sailor.
Awesome.
And this leads to something that's really important, that a point I want to make, and it's experiencing the experience, right? As long as we have a belief system or a theory about how things should be, we're not experiencing the thing that's happening to us. You know, it's the power of now, right? There's so much meaning behind that. And this concept became really clear to me back in 2008 when I started sailing and I went out and did the first race. Sailing is, you know, these are 22-foot boats and we're lake racing. We're not out, you know, in the ocean. We're on a lake and there's, you know, 30 people in the fleet and it's neck and neck and you can't hit the other boats and it's fast and it's intense. And if you make a mistake, you're going to capsize. You could die if you capsize. I mean, wow. Chances are you won't, but you can. If you get caught in a rope and you're under the water and you don't have a knife, or you pull your knife out of your vest and you drop your knife and it goes, you're stuck.
Wow.
You know, and it happens. So there's always, you know, safety first there. Mm-hmm. As I was in this very first sailboat race, and you have to be so in tune with the wind that you cannot think about anything else except for experiencing where you are. You are one with the wind. You are one with the sail. You're one with the tiller, the jib, the whole thing, weight shifting the boat. And as I did that and I realized there is nothing else to do except for being 100% fully present to the experience that I'm in right now. And if the race lasted for 90 minutes, I would come off the boat and be absolutely clear and clean and fresh, like somebody had just emptied my brain out of all the nonsense that was in there, mm-hmm. because I spent 90 minutes experiencing the experience, rather than theorizing about what it would be like to sail if I could win a race.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah. That's powerful. If people can't grasp that, rewind and listen to that again, because that was powerful. Yeah. Totally agree.
Yeah.
The present moment is all we have, and really grounding ourselves in that present moment can be a challenge sometimes, but it's worth it.
It can be, you know, and so I took up golf 10 years ago, and people always say golf is a mental game. And I couldn't figure out for the first couple of years because I was so worried about how I looked golfing, you know, like I would apologize. My husband, who's a brilliant, excellent golfer, would be paired with somebody else. And I'd be like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. So, you know, I'm really not a good golfer. I'm not good, but I'm fast. I can pick my ball up and move along, but I'm not good. And they'd be like, we don't care. And it started occurring to me, as long as I'm living in the, am I a good enough golfer? I'm never going to be able to improve my golf skills. And when I started going out to the golf range by myself, looking at my ball and completely being present to what's happening in my backswing and what's happening, and am I making contact with the ball and what's happening, being in the experience, my golf game vastly improved. Vastly improved. It is a mental game. You can't think about anything else other than what you're doing, or it's going to affect your game.
Yep. Yep. That's so true. So, and that goes with sports and it goes with life, right? If you're just stuck in your head all the time worrying about, is this going to happen? Oh, well, I wish I would have done this. I would, you know, you're never in the present, and that's where the magic happens.
So Adrian, I have a question for you. Like, what really inspires you? What inspires you to interview people and share knowledge with the world and share medicine with the world? What inspires you?
You know, for me, it's about, I get really passionate, inspired about getting the truth out there to people, just speaking about the truth on many of these topics that were, you know, been lied to about. I guess I'm as a Scorpio or whatever, I'm really into all these taboo topics, which are, you know, cannabis, psychedelics, sex, you know, all of this stuff that is taboo and hush hush, but so important, so impactful. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've been lied to about these things, or we've been, you know, shamed and, oh, don't talk about that. When really it's like, you know, our mental health and our sex is really very important parts of our overall health. And they're barely talked about. So that's a big inspiration for me.
I love that. I love that. And I mean, I know a little bit about your background. Sex is a huge one. So here's what happens with sex. You know, first of all, if you meet somebody and you're, I have a rule for any of my coaching clients and with my sons, you have 3 dates. And in those 3 dates, no tongue, no sex. In those 3 dates, you're just getting to know each other because, you know, our talent agent is who shows up on the dates, right? Here's what I want to say about entrepreneurship too, because it's the same with hiring, interviewing a person. The person you interview is never the person you end up hiring. The person you date is never the person you end up in the relationship with. Mm-hmm. You know, we show this act of ourselves that's not who we are because mm-hmm. we want you to love us. Mm-hmm. And then, so, you know, 3 dates, and then after 3 dates, 3 weeks. And in the 3 weeks, you're still not having intimacy, because in those 3 weeks, the things that you're not seeing about this person that you're googly eyed over, I want you to introduce them to your friends, because your friends are going to see something you're missing, because energetically, subconsciously, their wound is connecting to your wound. Your friends are going to pick it up and you won't. And then if you make it after 3 weeks, then you go to 3 months, and somewhere in that 3 months, you're probably going to have sex. But so that's my theory on having sex with people too soon. You don't even know who they are. And then here's the thing, if sex is great and it works for both partners and it's exciting, you potentially stay in a bad relationship for good sex. If sex is not great because you're both nervous because you really don't know each other yet, you potentially lost out on a great relationship because sex was not great because you had it too soon.
Right.
And so what happens is that, and I talk about this for a lot of female groups, you have sex the first time with the guy and you want him to think you are like the hottest thing since sliced bread. And so, of course, you are masterful at faking your orgasm. Masterful. He's never going to know it, and he'll go to his grave not even knowing that mm-hmm. that's what happened. Mm-hmm. And then what have you done? You've conditioned him that what he did works, and it works so well, you had an orgasm. So the next time he's going to do it again. And now you've backed yourself in the corner from the first fucking date. And now what do? When you're 8 months down the road and you're like, okay, I really don't want to have to fake my orgasms anymore. Say, you know, and back up. I need to tell you something. When really what should have happened was show them this is what works for me. This is what I do. This is what works. I love it. Let's talk through this because I want it to be as good for me as it is for you. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I can speak from the female's point of view. I feel like you would take tremendous pressure off of the guy to have to, you know, go back to the movie American Pie. He was pulling the book out from under the bed as he was reading it, as if what he knew how to do was really making her have that orgasm in the movie. That's what we think. We base our sex life off of American Pie kind of movies when it's not true at all. When we really don't even know ourselves sexually, and we don't have the courage or the confidence to say what makes us feel good, so that we can get closer to the other person and have that deep, intimate connection. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then what do? We go looking for it somewhere else. And then we start thinking there's something wrong with us. I don't know how to have an orgasm with a man. Well, no, you didn't know how to show him how to help you have an orgasm. I can't speak to the male perspective of it, but you walk into a bar and you interview 40-year-olds who have been sitting at that bar for a few hours. Every one of them, hands down, bar none, will start admitting how they faked orgasms most of their life.
Yeah. And if you talk to a lot of women that, you know, the concept of orgasm is foreign, even with themselves, they're like, I don't know what that is. I have a heart, you know? So how can you can't even get yourself there? How can you expect to show or communicate to your partner that it's obviously men don't have a problem with orgasm. That's the opposite of our issue, but it's females that really, you know, it goes so deep in learning more about yourself and the self-pleasuring and what actually gets you going, mm-hmm. and then being able to communicate that. Huge part of it, and a huge part of our just overall health, you know. And it's so shamed, and you know, oh, don't talk about that, and oh, it's like so weird in our culture in America where it's everywhere, everything sex sells, you know, but yet we don't talk about it,
right?
It's very contradictory.
And then there's all kinds of shame created around it, you know. This happened when I did Basic. This was my epiphany from Basic. I went, Friday night, our heads are all somewhere else. Mm-hmm. 5 o'clock Saturday morning, I woke my husband up and I said, you know, look, I mean, we're excellent communicators, and, you know, he's married to me, so nothing slides, right?
Right.
I said to him, you know, and I know that in that final second, it's not always me that makes it happen for you. And it's not always you that makes it happen for me. Doesn't mean I don't love you. Doesn't mean it doesn't feel great. Doesn't mean this. But sometimes the thought that makes it happen, if it's not one of us, what is that creating within us? That's creating a sense of subconscious instant guilt that we're pretending it was each other when it wasn't. And then what does that guilt cause? It causes us to over-deliver. It causes us to put up with things because we feel guilty that we weren't authentically ourselves when we had sex this morning. And we thought about someone else. And this is mostly all subconscious shit. It's all subconscious, Adrian. Mm-hmm. And pardon my potty mouth. It's almost all subconscious stuff. Like, we'll think it for a second and then we blank it out. Our ego gets rid of it. So I mm-hmm. said to him, for the rest of our lives, I don't care what you think about. Your thoughts are not our marriage. How you treat me is our marriage. Now, if you're fantasizing about your ex-wife, we get to talk about that. You know, we get to talk about it if it's something that you think is an affair of the heart. But if it's, you know, the cleavage I pointed out to you when we were walking through the mall and said, look at that beautiful girl. I don't give a shit. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't care. And he was like, wow. So it led us to start a conversation that morning about where we do this in all parts of our life. And he said, you know, I take care of the landscape. We had a landscaper. We let the landscaper go. Daryl's like, we don't have a big yard. I want to do it. You know, we both love to garden. He said, you tell me that we're not allowed to have anything but flowering white trees and shrubs in our yard. And I have to take care of the shrubs. And I want color, but I'm always angry at you. And I don't really do my best job in the yard because I really hate it that I do the work, but you control what I get to look at, the flower colors. Mm-hmm. Okay. This is so ridiculous and so far off of sex, but this so represents great communication between a couple.
Yeah.
And I said, really? I said, Daryl, you're right. You do, you know, you are completely responsible for the landscaping. For the rest of our life, you get whatever you want in the yard. I don't care if they're, I don't care what they are. He literally got up, got showered, got in his truck, drove to the nursery, came home an hour later, and the whole back of the truck was filled with like red and pink and purple perennials. And he spent the whole weekend planting them. Happy as a clam.
There you go. Yep.
It's communication. 100% of everything can be resolved in communication, Adrian. Mm-hmm. 100%.
I love that. And I know we could talk for hours and days about so many topics, but, you know, I think this is a good place to stop. And I just want to say, if you know, leave it for you to, you know, end with anything on your mind or for people listening, whatever you would like to end this awesome conversation with. Really appreciate
it. Love yourself. Yep. Love yourself. Trust yourself. Trust other people. Other people aren't there to hurt you. If they're acting like a jerk, they're operating from a wound. If you're receiving it like they're hurting you, that's your wound to heal. Go with your big idea for business. Go for it. You know, I mean, when the casket is closing, What are you going to wish? Build the relationships, repair the relationships, make the phone calls, call the people, apologize, tell people you love them just because you want to call them and tell them that you love them. You know, I think that's really important. You know, if anybody has any questions, you can reach me on Instagram. I'm at Streamlined Success. On LinkedIn, I'm Dorothy Andreas. On Facebook, I just, under my profile page, Dorothy Andreas. And, you know, find me. I respond to everything myself. Awesome. My VA puts them out there, but I respond. So.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you. I'm so grateful for our, you know, us meeting and you being in my life and everything I'm learning from you. And so really grateful for you and to till next time.
Oh, I love you, Adrian. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you. Yep. All right. I'll talk to you soon. Yep.